Fred Collins, Reel 3.
The Rifleman's Tower was a sort of outpost, you know, sort of from inside the camp itself to prevent people from approaching too close that had been the scene. And it also overlooked a sort of conversion point for two nullahs, you know, that's like small valleys, and you can see that. And the object there was people that could come along the valley without you being seen from the camp itself, so that was there so that they couldn't be surprised by a crowd coming along that particular spot. And it was quite self-contained for the all, you know, could be there for a fortnight if necessary, rations there for the job. And I believe most of the chaps looked forward to a stint on there because they weren't doing the normal parades inside the place. We'll say it on from there. Well, in that particular, we did once do an exercise out from that area, going out along this valley, and it was only more or less a day exercise. We had to go to some village up in the mountains at the side. And I remember it was quite a climb out of the place. And then on the way coming back, it was usually the time when you got sniped up, when you were leaving the pickets where you were withdrawing and coming back to camp. And just when we were coming down, we started some shooting with the last men down coming up. And surprisingly enough, when we got down to the bottom and started checking up and we got under safe, anybody injured? And one fellow said, I thought I'd been hit on the head, but we took his topi off and there was a bullet hole right through it. And if you'd put a stick through it, he couldn't have put his hat on. His topi must have been bouncing up and down on top of it. And then another thick set lad, proper Yorkshire type, he said, "Yeah, I think I was being shot up the arse." And we looked to see what it was, what he meant by it. And he said he'd felt quite a bump on it, like, and he was bleeding when he put his hand back. And what had happened, the scabbard of the bayonet, the fit of the Lee Enfield rifle, was about 18 inches long. It had a metal part at the top where the thing, and a metal part on the bottom for protection. And the bullet had hit the bottom part of it and shattered the outside steel in the scabbard, but the blade inside had diverted the bullet. Of course, the thing had hit him hard against his behind, and the little bits off the outside of the thing had stuck in his behind on the side there, and he was very lucky that way. And that was just one or two, you know, instances on that particular route. We did various exercises from the camp itself, going out in different directions, and you might be out just for a day, opening the road towards Banu, or you might be out 2 or 3 days going out to show the flag to various villages in the plain. I remember one we went out in the area, I believe they call the place Ladder, more or less the opposite direction, going out from Rifleman's Tower, up the opposite side. And we were out 3 or 4 days on that particular one, and we were getting close to a village, or we went for a village, where they were making weapons, ammunition and things like that. And we had quite a rough climb getting to it. You know? And I know the first time when we were going along, we'd been one night, we'd built a sangharada ourselves up on the top, and then during the night, they had someone approaching, a number of people, you could tell it was, which is most unusual, and it turned out that some of our own people had come up to bring us back, tell us to be very quiet and come in. And we followed them down, and they'd got the tip off, the battalion got the tip off, that the route we were going, the packet of EP's men were ahead of us, and they got dug in on the top on these places. So the battalion were going to move earlier than usual and get into position to tackle them. And when we got down, we were moving along in the various pickets, my turn come early morning in the daylight to move on to one picket. And I was called forward and said, "Right, now open the picket, there's definitely been movement seen there since early on this morning. And you've got to take it." Here goes, I said, "Oh, there, Freddie, this is your first chance in real action, you know." Off we went, telling the sections what they had to do to climb this mountain. You had to be really fit up to it, like. And I was telling the lads what to do, and one and I had two grenade men, like with you could put grenades into a, what they call a rifle, fitted on a rifle and fire from there, in case there was anybody in and started shooting before we got to the top. And the other one, if we got right to the top, so to make a final charge, some of them meant to go the opposite side of the place and the rest of us to go around it, and a couple of some of us to go into it. Anyway, we went to the top expecting to be shot at all the time. And just before the last final, shouted one and I'm charging, we went like. And there was five mountain goats come dashing out of the damn place. That's all we know. All expected some enemy and five mountain goats in it. That's the activity that's been seen all day. And when we moved out from there, we were holding the picket against the main body. The main body moved on to the place where the Faculty of EP's men were going to be dug in, and they'd made positions there for them. And our chaps had gone in position right them for first, waiting for them to come up. And they can actually hear them, and somebody got excited and fired around, and of course the others all went back then, and that was a frustrated scheme had all gone wrong. Eventually, on the way back, and not far from Razmak itself, just when we finished the journey back, in a nullah again, there was one sniper right up on the hill, really dug in, because he was sniping away as they were coming along the river bend in an open patch. And they hit one man, not seriously, and then what it did, it meant that they were going to make a dash over this open pass and get it, keep into the side of the mountain, away from them. But they held the brigade for ages, you know, and hours anyway in the play. And eventually they got the, I think it was the Gurkhas that went up behind them and they cleared him out, and they said he was dug into in a cave affair. And it was only a 14-year-old boy that had been sniping at us all the time. And then and in that same particular one, there was a chap onto his mule. He, come on, get on there, get on there. And then realised the poor thing had been shot at and a bullet in its side. And you could see the hole, you know. I feel sorry for the poor thing going. I don't know whatever happened to it eventually, whether it lived to get back to Razmak or whether they could patch it up or what happened. But he was just still going along stoically with his load on. And those are the type of things that you came across.
Was such organised and determined resistance usual among the tribesmen?
No, not really. It was more or less a hit and a miss thing every time. We usually found that we were going forward to sort of show the flag. On the other hand, in this particular place, they didn't want us to reach the village where they were making these things to do any damage against the manufacture of the weapons. And as I say, we just did the sort of outpost, the column. We didn't do the final, whatever happened in the village, I don't really know. But no, we were out there and it was quite a march. And we came back again at the sanctuary of Razmak itself. And we always used to have a damn good time, you know. When we got back in camp, you always check your ammunition, your kit and everything first, of course. And then you could have a meal, and then after that you had a drink or such, which was in the canteens and the corporal's mess or whatever you were in the town. And we used to have some nice shindig down there. And we used to have games, football, running, things like that. And Rifleman's Tower was manned. Between Rifleman's Tower and the outside, the perimeter wall, we had a football field. And we used to play football on there. But you used to have two companies on the outside, or at least one company on the outside, to protect us against sniping the game from that side. Eventually, during our stay in Razmak, we moved the perimeter wall outside, further out, so their football field was actually inside the perimeter wall at that particular spot. And we used to have the football matches and company competitions, company sports games, running and the various distances. All the usual sports events you could take part in. That was in addition to your normal duties inside, which you kept up, man. We had various names for pickets just outside the place. One, the first one, when we were going down towards Banu, the first one towards that area, was looking around the Banner Road up on the right-hand side, what were called Buckshead Picket. It was more or less just out of there, but you had to go down over about 1,000 feet, then come up a couple of 1,000 feet to get onto it. And that was very near to home, the first one you went there. In fact, when you hit that one, you very hit another one further on, because you had to come down that and go further on, depends how far you were going with your column. But you'd take that one first, and when all the rest of the column had gone forward, then you would come down and go forward again, probably to do another picket later on. And I remember one particular case, and we'd gone up on that spot, we were at home more or less, and we were just doing the one picket that particular day. And when we got on the top, it really rained, and when it does rain, it rains out there. We'd gone through the what was the river bed, is actually just dry bricks, and we got up there early in the morning, and by lunchtime, around about 12 o'clock, there was a strong river flowing down where we'd come, and coming back when we were withdrawing, we had to sort of form line to go across it, all right was above it, and hold each other's that way, form a chain to get across it for safety, you see. As it was, one man lost his rifle, was flooded down, was hopeless to try and find it in the torrents. So we went back to Razmak and it was reported, and of course the first thing the next morning, just on daylight, we were there in that particular river bed, which of course the water had gone properly by then again. It comes down, it forms up quick and goes away quickly in the mountains. But we never found the rifle, whether the seismen had been there first or whether I can't imagine it wasn't so far away floating, or the speed of the water could carry it a long way, no doubt. But I think the rifle, the seismen got it first before we did. We used to do pickets, and when we went showing the flag, we went around, we used to go right along from Razmak, along the Razmak Narai, as they're called, that was the plain sort of. And we go right down towards one of the main pickets that was on the our outpost on the frontier was Datakel. We used to head towards that area on a couple of occasions. And a place called Mamiroga, I think it was the name of the place. We had a couple of skirmishes there in the place. And going down off the Razmak Narai was a terrific drop. Also a terrific climb coming back up the road, backward and forward across the mountain to get you up there. And the mules and the lorries used to follow the road. Some of us used to get down in between the roads and move down quicker. But it was a rare climb, a rare descent, whichever you were doing at the time. We went out in one particular village, or going that way, to a place called, a village called Om. There'd been some trouble out there, and we had to go in. How true it was, I don't know, but they said that one of the officers had been shot earlier, not in our regiment, but they'd gone back and they wanted so many rupees for his body. And they eventually, it was, I don't know whether his family paid the money, but they only gave him his body, they'd give him his head, and there was trouble and they went in for him. Now, how far that is out, I don't know the actual details, but that was the tale when we were out there. And we went out to, when they actually closed this small village of Bomb, they cleared it off the ground, the sappers and miners blew it up. But we had quite a good do there. I also remember there, I was the farthest outpost in one particular spot, just myself and two men. And I thought, towards the end of the evening, back home was rather quiet. Nip up to the top, because it was, we were down below. Nip up to the top and see if you can see them towards the battalion. Nobody there, nobody there. Come on then, we had to draw the three of them. And the battalion, what had happened, I don't know, because we'd been forgotten entirely, we were miles away. And we come across a small village where we had to pass, you know, a bit sicky, but the battalion can't have been far away that side then. But we wanted some water, the lads wanted some water. We hadn't had any for quite a long time. And I know they wanted to buy them. They wanted us 3 or 4 rupees, but we only got paid about a rupee a day. So anyway, we managed to get back and join the battalion. And on that particular occasion, a lad called Louis Fenniger, a Cockney lad from Stonehall, he was a very lively cop, and we walked to town like we'd been pals for years. And going out to that particular spot, he got killed in the first one. We were going sort of leapfrog, and one did a, you know, you got on one mountain and you move forward. And Bluey got killed on that. I also remember that as a sort of the first cousin, right close to me, you know, like close friend. And to see him going out with 2 feet and one putty on the block, and walk, a bit of a shock, you know, to see. And we got back eventually from that camp. And on a number of occasions we had to go out like that. We were going along on one particular spot, more or less the same direction. I think it was when we went out, more or less on the last big do. We chased the back of the VP to a place called, what was it now? I'm stuck for the name at the time. You know, it was quite distant, more out that particular way. And going along, after leaving one camp, the tribesman had got on the road that we knew we had to follow, and had mined it, and we had to send the sappers and miners along, first of all, to sort the way out and mark it, and the whole brigade had to go out in single file to get through these places. There were that many bombs and marked up. And one of the Gurkhas running in the first lot had gone out where they knew about these. He had his feet blown off from his ankles. He got caught on it. And the place we were heading for, more or less a final chase on the fact of the EP, I remember there was a place called Wasgai. And we went down from that camp there, and that was towards the Toshi River. And we had some rare climbs on that place. And I remember coming down before we got to the river, or where the river should have been. We came down at one spot and I had to go and report to my company commander. And he was sat with another major, Major Ainley. And Major Ainley, he'd only just recently come back from England. He'd been on leave and then come back to take command there. And he sat down and asked how I was, and I got down. I said, a bit out of breath as usual, let it come right there. And he said, how could you do ice cream right now? I said, well, I got that with me. And by some miracle, he'd had one in his in the mess kit that had arranged for him in one of these cooling pans they carry on the side. And we moved on eventually, and the river that's dammed the Toshi River, where there should have been water, dammed it. And we had, when we got to the river, they eventually they only had one plane, I think, up on the front, and that was at the place at the top. Miran Shah, I think that was where the Air Force was. And they got the plane to come out and bomb where they'd had the dam and let the river come through. And of course, it was a chance to have a bathe. We'd been out then for 2 or 3 days, and everybody stripped off and was at a bath where they could. And one of our majors, he'd been shot with a machine gun burst in the First World War, my own company commander. And they used to, what was his name? They used to give me his first nickname, old chin strap, an old tin legs, as they call it. He'd been shot and we used to walk off with a very thin leg. And it was a sight to see. He got himself stripped off with this water bottle. Come on then, don't you stand there, told us the lads. Get some water thrown on me. It was a great opportunity for lads to get. That's, you know, just one or two instances you remember as you're going forward at these things. And on that particular occasion, we went right forward, and I reckon we must have got very close to the Afghan border. And we'd been very close to doing a sort of pincer movement on this place where they thought the fact of the VP was. And we must have missed him by about 30 minutes because they were still cooking utensils there and eating and everything. And there was a lot of money, rupees, etc., in the place, the caves where they'd been settled in. But they never got him. They never, eventually, they never got him all the time we were up there. I think the rumour said afterwards, like we heard, that he never packed in his activities until Pakistan was formed, from the business altogether. And
did you have any of the tribesmen on your side at all?
We had a number of what were called Kasadars. And there were sort of local guides recruited as local guides, and I remember one fellow, they were all a sticker, with a very big dark chap, you know, even darker Indian, very tall, Big George we used to call him. And we had a rifle range just outside Razmach, we used to go and fire out, but of course you had your pickets out to stop you over the top of the place. And we were firing on the range, you know, keeping practice, and George was with us, the Cassidar, and one of the officers told him to go and have a shot at the place, and we were firing about 300 or 400 yards in. And he got down and fired, never saw a thing that happened, and he started playing war, indicating, pointing back over. So eventually they said, okay, then let him go back. And he went back and climbed a hill, it must have been about 1,000 yards from the target. Then he got down and fired, 3 straight into the bull, no mucking about. And that's what, you know, I think they'd been saying, same as the rest of the frontiersmen were, the natives, and they were all trained for sniping at long distances, for safety sort of business. And that was a thing that sort of proved it, you know. They couldn't hit the target from 300 or 400 yards, but somebody got back to 1,000 straight on the job.
Were they very trustworthy?
Well, I mean, I think George probably was with the people that knew him, but we just saw him now and again, you know. I think he was probably guiding with the officers more than anything, and they probably got to know him better than what we did. Because he was stationed with part of the officers, Amaldars, I think they called the officers, the native officers, and he was Amaldar in charge of them. The Jamadars, I don't know what the names were. I forgot which ranks they were nowadays. But that was some of them. There's Jamadars and Abaldars and things like that. And they used to be there, but I always remember climbing up one particular spot between two of the places. A lot of mountains that go in all directions, you know, the mountains. So if you look at the contours on the map, it's really dazzling. And I remember climbing up a real hot day. We were sweating tin hats and we had big packs and everything. And one of these fellas is supposed to be a guide with us. When we got moving, just climbed to the top of one of these places, settled down straight away, and I was just putting the men out. Board garum, sir, board garum. Very hot. Get up, and get moving. What do you think? It must be hot for us. You know, he's a native sailor, board garum. And we know something, got in position, there was a couple of shots fired. And again, it was depending on which tribesman you had with you. He would always say automatically, it's one of the other tribesmen. There was my sons, and what's the other one? That was the side, more or less across the valley, you see. My sons and Pathans. If you had a Masud, Pathans. If you had a Pathan with you, my sons. So somebody started shooting. It wasn't their side. You never sort of got close to them because you just went in with them in the particular days. We had I remember seeing one of them, the Big George, I think it was, and one of these other men with him. We had, in Razmach itself, they put a skating rink for up the amenities on the landing. An open air skating rink it was, with a bit of a shed all round the outside, sitting down children. And they were in there. I remember him trying to go on the skates. What a job he had. He was using some foul language, you know, whatever language he was using. Pushed to, I suppose, he spoke to in that area. And they used to light up. We used to have some great fun on there. But even there, they used to have a go when it was in the middle of the camp, all that. But they used to have a go and try to hit somebody with the rifles, with the snipers from outside. But by the time they got there, he had a couple of shots maybe come into play. But the bullets were spent by the time they got in there. But you could hear the shots and then some chip down against the other side. There's a number of little instances like that, you know. I remember just before we came down as well, we had our, you know, we were looking forward to going down onto the plains again. We were going down to Fraser Paul. So we went into the market with what money we'd been allowed to save. And two of us got measured, two corporals, we both got measured for a new suit, for you know, a civvy suit on the plane. In fact, they were photographed it, weren't they? So having got the suits just before we were going down, we decided one Sunday morning we'd put them on and try them out. So we put the suits on and walked round the camp in the civvies down the main road. have the soon as we got to the Gurkhas camp, passing, turn out the garden again. Good God, I said, you're getting shot to this. Go to the corner, and he called, keep marching, he said. Just acknowledge the salute and go on. And this happened, and we passed two camps. I said, hey, we better get back, I'm probably get shot or something. They turned the guard out each time, think we were officers, because we were just in civilian clothes. We had, just as the memory states, as you're going up, from the entrance near the bookshop, picking the first entrance, the Kasadars and people used to come in and report in there, but you used to have to take the weapons off them. They had some marvellous daggers and knives, things like that. And you used to sort of make some mark on the book. They'd put his thumbprint on the book where he'd come in and get his finger bit. And they'd leave these daggers with you, the guard commander, on the particular entrance to the place. And there were some really fancy jobs in the scabbards inlaid, and some were gold wire and mother of pearl, all that sort of thing. Really fancy jobs was amongst them. I bet that, you know, if you get hold of someone that can bring some money in these places. And of course, if you opened, they were real sharp. They sure with the damn things, I should imagine. Yeah, there used to be some rare weapons amongst them. I don't know that we. Went up and talking about you got really fit, you were like mountain goats yourself, you were up and down. When we were handing over, we got another battalion coming to take over off us. They put so many of the NCOs in detachments to, you know, they'll give me two sergeants, and said directly to them, no, you're under the corporal's command, whatever he says, you do it exactly, he said. I remember we went up to Bookshee Picket and I said, oh, we've got an easy one, we've got the first one out today, so you're all right. And I told them what was going to happen, how we would go up, like, and I put them with the second section, the company commander and the platoon commander went up with the front one. And I said, right, now you stay with him, with that corporal. I said, and do stay with him, keep up with him and get moving. I said, you don't want to be left on your own, you'll either get nicked off if you're on your own. Anyway, we bashed up to the top of Bookshee Picket. And when the section come up, and I left these lads with, I said, where's the two sergeants? Oh, he said, they're packed in near the bottom. I said, they're packed in? Why didn't you get shouting to me or something about it? Where are they now? They're still down there. Get hold of the next Lance Corporal and said, take charge on the truck and head men in position. So I'll go and route these people out. And we're going halfway down the really mountain again to get hold of them. I said, come on, get yourselves up here. I told you, mate, you're likely to get killed, you know, being on your own and sniped and then, you know, could have been attacked easy. Well, they said, we can't go up there like bloody mountain goats, you know, lads. We'll never climb places like that. Oh, I said, well, we might have been a bit quick. I'm sorry, like, we expect everybody to be the same. But I said, you will climb eventually. You'll get as fit as what we are if you'll be there in length of time. But you didn't realise, you know, how fit you were. You just automatically went to it.